The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello, and thanks very much for tuning into this week's episode of the Ball Bags podcast, episode 7. Delighted to be joined by a familiar voice for those of you that tune into Huddles and Stout. It is Rocky. How are you, my fine sir?
All good, Sasquatch. I say all good. I got the flu jab 3 weeks ago. And in that three-week span, I haven't felt more sick. So the anti-vaxxers are in danger of me throwing my lot in with them. Things were that bad.
I'm not sure on the kind of segmentation of kind of where our listeners' stance is as it comes to vaccination, but I'll keep them in the loop if there is any. Feel free to reach out and we can send on Rocky's personal details if you want to invite him to a rally or a protest somewhere.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Tash and Chief send their apologies. I can't be here tonight, but we'll have them back in next week. So we'll power through just the two of us. But as we do typically, to kick us off, who's your player of the week and why?
Well, listeners of Huddles and Stout will know that we are susceptible to some extreme bias. So this week I've gone for AJ Brown. He's just been named the NFC Offensive Player of the Month. 40 catches, 700 yards, 5 touchdowns. And most NFL fans will know because it's been ringing around the media scape that he's just surpassed Megatron's 5-game consecutive 125 yards a game record.
Plus,
So he's just on a tear at the moment, as is Tyreek Hill, but AJ Brown is just the last month or so has really clustered together in a dominant performance. All time.
And to be fair,
we're looking at potentially a Hall of Famer at work in his prime here.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, in addition to that, I suppose it's the second consecutive week being nominated Player of the Week. I brought my Philly bias with me last week and nominated him. My recommendation for Player of the Week is Dion Fury. So, for those of you who don't know, obviously the Rugby World Cup final was last Saturday. It was a bit of a clash for the ages, maybe one for purists. But Dion Fury, at 37 years of age, started on the bench after an injury, kind of in the first few minutes. He came on to play hooker, which isn't his position, and played the full game there. Like, I wouldn't say he was the match winner, but the ability for him in the twilight stages of his career to stand up and be counted in the biggest stage in rugby union, I just thought he definitely deserves a mention.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to put the argument forward that Dion Fury gets it this week, because I feel like AJ Brown will get multiple if he keeps going the way he's going.
Look, I don't have a problem, because obviously Dion did it on the big game, the big stage. You could absolutely and probably easily make a case for AJ Brown, but as you say, he's stringing these performances together. It's likely not going to be his last mention. But at the same time, yeah, Dion doing it on the big stage is something that has to be said for that.
Fair. That was easy. Now, I suppose the main segment, agree to disagree. And look, keeping with the theme of Player of the Week, it's going to be rugby and NFL, I think, as we covered this. But I'll open it up with a nice, vague, kind of flexible answer or question. We'll see where the answer takes.
Thanks very much for that.
So the 2003 Rugby World Cup has come and gone, and we've talked about it a lot over the course of the season. Naturally enough, it kind of kicked off with us. It's nice of World Rugby to schedule the World Cup around our podcast. But I suppose, do we feel it has had the impact we hoped? And there's a second part to the question, which is there any obvious improvements to future iterations?
I want to preface what I'm going to say off by saying it was a good championship, and there were some, you know, games of all time in this, particularly if you maybe the quarterfinal between France and South Africa is one of the highlights. And not to mention there was a few of the ones even in the pool stages, Fiji beating Australia, Portugal beating Fiji to see a nice third tier team kind of performing. So a good championship all around, but I think maybe for the casual viewer, well, it might have started off pretty strong, maybe it tapered towards the end. Just a couple of pointers or perspectives is, you know, we saw a semi-final between Argentina and New Zealand that was, you know, it wasn't a very entertaining one. It wasn't very thrilling. It was sort of very lopsided. And then maybe, you know, if it's a new viewer, probably would gone unnoticed. But for casual viewers as well, kind of a repeat champion. I don't know, maybe, you know, you want to see a bit of the competitiveness. And one other thing I'd point out maybe is, of the top six world-seeded teams, five of them were across two different pools. So the spread of competition was a little bit concentrated.
Yeah, I suppose that was kind of one of the points I kind of had. And it's difficult to lobby this as an Irish fan because it does seem a bit sour grapesy. But potentially the draw for the World Cup shouldn't be done until maybe a year out. I think it was done on basically standings 3 years ago, which resulted, how you've said, like England were up the top around then. It was kind of the first year or two of Eddie Jones. I just feel, and obviously we just gone from Joe Schmidt to the new Andy Farrell tenure, so there's a bit of kind of change and minutiae around that. That would be, one of my big takeaways is the quarterfinals were better than the semifinals, and that should never really happen. Because, albeit France and Africa probably was the game of the World Cup, I think Ireland and New Zealand wasn't a million miles behind it as a neutral. We're obviously not neutral, so
certainly hard not to be biased
there. But yeah, great game. And on balance of play, England probably made it to the semi-finals on the back of an easy quarter-final, which is against Fiji. And they made it to that quarter-final just about pipping Samoa in the group stages. So, look, fair play to them. They played South Africa tight, which stylistically has to be done. I think we had kind of talked going into it, it would capture the imagination. It was kind of dubbed the TikTok World Cup, but I don't think the PR side of things was handled fantastically. Just being hypercritical, I think you look at, say, how the NBA latches on to shortening attention spans of the youth, very much across our social media channels. They are kind of on a nightly basis posting kind of the top 10 dunks in kind of 30 second Instagram reel, TikTok highlight packages. They just draw in new fans, and I think potentially World Rugby kind of missed the trick there, especially with the sponsorship from TikTok, which is kind of bizarre.
I've certainly seen TikToks from World Rugby, but they're so few and far between. They're those sponsored ads as well. Most people probably scroll by them, but certainly their presence could have done with absolute hyperinflate it and get it out there, blazing it across every channel they have.
what they also did, which is kind of counterintuitive, is they kind of shut down a lot of people who were reposting footage that weren't like official sponsors and stuff like that. Yeah. So, like, those people are selling your product for you.
Absolutely.
It kind of seems counterintuitive to shut it down, especially when largely the competition is being aired on terrestrial TV. So that, to me, just kind of didn't feel... It was the behavior of a sport that's put behind a paywall.
Yeah.
When the alternative is to kind of open it out to the air. But look, I think overall it was a good World Cup. Probably an ultimately a disappointing one for the Irish fan. I don't feel it captured the attention of the global audience. And look, I think it could have been better. But look, it was enjoyable. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. The second part of your question, any obvious improvements to future iterations? Probably worth touching on the announced changes that are going to be for the next World Cup. The biggest one, probably, they're expanding from 4 pools of 5 teams to 6 pools of 4 teams. So 4 extra teams, and they're obviously increasing the number of pools and probably, you know, putting more top-seeded pools across the top-seeded teams in the world across the pools, to hopefully having a bit of a fair distribution of competitiveness. Probably, like, again, you're going to draw in more fans of the lower tier teams because they're going to have a greater chance of qualification to later rounds. The top 2 teams from every pool, as well as the 4 best third place teams, will qualify.
My only fear with that is that you get more drubbings. So in the group stage, there's quite a few drubbings, as there always is. And I think you'll now get more drubbings in knockout stages, so the last 16.
Yes.
I think it's inevitable that this will come, but yeah, look, maybe I'll be proven wrong.
I think they kind of, you know, cite that this will promote competitiveness among the sort of the, you know, globally, among second and beyond tier teams. We'll see how much of an impact it has, but, you know, it's certainly worth an iteration of it, I think, just to see how it pans out.
Fair. Look, the timer did go, so I think we'll keep the same shape of ball, but we'll move maybe across the Atlantic Ocean.
We'll touch on, I suppose, kind of a significant period in the NFL, the trade deadline. It's come and gone. And this year feels like there wasn't as much fanfare maybe as previous seasons. Last year in particular was a bit of a nuclear bomb of activity. So has the fact that fewer teams are running away with it this year, a lot of the records seem to be pretty centralized, pretty nucleized. So is the fact that no teams are running away with it, is that contributing to the teams, fewer teams, willing to gut their assets, to sell off their pieces?
Yeah.
Or is it just one of those... Yeah, or is it just a year where nothing happens?
I think there's a few parts to it. One, it's a very competitive draft class, potentially. So I think we've had a few years where the talent was impacted in the latter stages of high school and the early stages of collegiate level by COVID, whereas now they've pretty much had a free run. So in terms of develop, you're getting more developed athletes. So there's a bigger reward for rebuilding now than there has been for the past few seasons. So a few sides that have maybe trucked away and now they see it as their opportunity to rebuild. If you look at, say, just the NFC, for example, in terms of playoff places, you've got Philly, San Fran, Dallas, Detroit, Seattle. And then you're going to have the NFC South champion, whoever that is. And then the seventh spot is kind of going to be, at very least, a mediocre team. So it's probably going to be LA... Like, do you know what I mean? It's going to be a mediocre side.
Yeah. one thing I had written down for this point is that the Panthers are 1-6 and are probably considered by most the most dreadful team out there. But they're only 3 games behind the leader of that division.
Yeah.
So as you say, it would be surprising but not outrageous or impossible for somebody like the Panthers to sneak in.
You're going to have, like, that's the thing, you're going to have the NFC South champion and the 7 side is going to be a poor side as well. So you're going to have 5 teams in the NFC. The AFC is not much different. So I think there's just, you've actually got like a great bit of parity at the top in that you've got quite a few teams who seem like they're thereabouts. But there just seems to be a massive drop between kind of maybe the top 9 to 10 teams in the NFL and the rest then. There doesn't seem to be a middle class at present. It seems to be kind of upper class and lower class, and that's what it kind of seems to be. So that's probably why...
Yeah, just to add on to that as well, you say there's 2 classes. I think each week as well we're seeing risers and fallers from the 2 tiers. Like 3-4 weeks ago we would have said San Francisco might be the best team in the NFL, and suddenly they've I won't say panic bought Chase Young at the deadline, but certainly felt the need to improve because they've just been on a 3-game skid. At the same with the Titans, or I should say on the flip, the Titans, they traded away Kevin Byard. It kind of heralded them good and everything. But then Will Levis comes out, plays a great game, and they're suddenly hanging on to their pieces. Derrick Henry and DeAndre Hopkins were slated for trade, but they stayed put.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams just have so many different options. And as you said, we've a new Super Bowl favorite, it seems, every week.
Yeah.
So, like, if Philly lose to Dallas, which they very well could, and still be quite comfortable, the Baltimore Ravens will probably be the Super Bowl favorites next week. And it seems as if every week we've had a new Super Bowl favorite.
Yeah, and Jacksonville Jaguars, who've won, I think, 4 in a row, all of a sudden people are keying into them, and people are calling them the hottest team in football. There's
absolutely, and then
huge amount of flux.
Yeah, every week we seem to have a new team, and it's almost as if the franchise have been led by the media. It's, as you said, obviously Will Levis had one good game, an opening promising debut. It happens, but because that came before trade deadline on Tuesday, they've completely changed what was the stance of the organization prior to Sunday.
Yeah.
I would have said on Saturday, good opportunity for Derrick Henry to move on. As soon as Sunday happened, it was never going to happen then. It's bizarre how flimsy the organizations are as well as public opinion.
And maybe another point to look at as well, if you were to consider the Las Vegas Raiders, who are a dreadful team, seem to have no redeeming marks, but yet they neither brought any talent in nor sort of, you know, gutted anything to recoup any value from players that won't be winning anything soon. But you saw the GM and head coach just get canned, fired, as well as the offensive coordinator. So it obviously looked as if the owner stepped in as he had lost all confidence for them to operate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And look, they're in a strange place because their star player is a want away. And I understand his want away-ness. It's not just how bad the organization is. It's the fact that you traded him to play with a quarterback and you traded away that quarterback. So I get all that. It's interesting times. But look, November is just always a key month for the NFL. Like, you obviously have the trade deadline, but then you also kind of... it's the general perception that after Thanksgiving, it's when it gets really real. So, a lot to keep an eye on.
Yes. Just before we do move on, what is your favorite trade deadline, transfer window across all sports? The NBA, I think, is a pretty pretty explosive one at times.
Yeah, and it generally varies. I think the Premier League one used to be fantastic when it was on Sky Sports News and they'd go to the grounds. It just seems to have died a bit of a death in recent years because they had to stop doing that because presenters were getting hit in the head with dildos and stuff like that. It varies. The NBA actually sometimes can be more exciting when the trade window opens.
Mm.
So a lot of it can be working in the background, and the minute the trade, there was one year, I think it was 2019, where you just had so many domino pieces fall within the first 72 hours. So many sides playing. So I think it fluctuates, if I'm being honest.
Sure, and there's no clear year to year, sport to sport.
Yeah.
What a diplomatic answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Man of the people. What about yourself, Rocky? What's your favorite trade deadline or transfer window?
Well, I do really subscribe to the NFL, and I love all of the calendar dates, the draft, the deadline. So I probably would stick with the NFL, if I'm being honest. But I am partial. I keep a very casual eye on the NBA. The trade deadline is always a time where I pay a bit of extra attention, as well as the MLB deadline as well. I almost prefer keeping an eye on personnel changes across the teams in the NBA and MLB than I do watching the two sports. But it probably would be the NFL on top.
Yeah, look, I suppose the interesting thing with the NBA one is because there's so few stars, i.e. five, one trade can completely transform an entire organization.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, look, we move on. And just to kind of segue us out to the end of the show, nice quick one for you this Friday morning. Must see TV this weekend. I'm going to enjoy both of these, but I'll let you go first.
Well, again, there's probably no surprise. People would probably guess, but it is Dallas week in Philadelphia. It's the Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's my selection. Sunday at 9:25. Be there.
Or be square. Look, it's a fixture I certainly circle every year, regardless of how they're going. It's just one of those classic rivalries, even if I wasn't biased in my approach.
Yeah, even for the neutral fan, just big implications in the NFC. Huge implications.
Yeah. And look, for no reason alone, there'll be memes out of this game. There's a guaranteed memes every Eagles-Cowboys matchup. I would have picked it had you not got there first. But my pick is, again, incredibly biased. Newcastle make the trip to the Emirates Saturday evening, 5:30, Sky Sports, main event. And I just think where the two clubs are at present, obviously both challenging in Europe and for Europe next season, it's a key matchup. So,
yeah, with Gunners, huh?
Make sure you tune for that. Yeah. The Gunners and the Tunes.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's kind of this week's Much CTV. I do promise the listener we're going to have an episode shortly where there's not just two blokes. It has been a bit kind of poor attendance as of late. But look, we're busy people and amateur podcasters.
Incredibly amateur. You've no idea.
You say that, but they don't. They only see what we put out. They don't see what we don't put out, if that makes sense.
I see.
Well, look, that's all from me.
And that's all from me.
Thank you, and good night.